Jesus had a certain joy that made him able to endure that horrible, ignominious death. You know what that joy was? I'm looking at it. You're his joy. The joy that one day he would move the fence all the way to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and put you in, and you in, and you in. That's the joy that was set before him. It was his joy to move the fence and include you.
Today on Connect with Skip Heitzig, Pastor Skip concludes his message, Cross Culture, and shares how you are the joy that enabled Jesus to face suffering and death on the cross. Now, here's more about a new resource that gives you powerful insight into the current war in Israel.
Israel at War. That's the title of a new book by Skip Heitzig. Modern Israel has been at war from its very first day of existence. As Skip points out,
on the day after Israel became a nation, that was May 14th, 1948. On May 15th, virtually every Arab neighbor attacked Israel to destroy it. Israel had been a nation one day. They didn't have an organized army.
Israel at War is up to date concerning current events in the Mideast and includes Skip's comments during his December tour of the Gaza border and a video link to Skip's interview in Jerusalem. The new book, Israel at War, is our gift to you this month to anyone who encourages the growth of Connect with Skip with a gift of $50 or more. Make your financial vote of support at connectwithskip.com or by calling 1-800-922-1888. Israel at War will give you Skip's insight from over 40 trips to Israel and decades of Bible study.
I know the Middle East seems like a very complex situation. It's actually pretty basic. One side wants the other side dead. On one side, you have a Jewish nation, a Jewish state called modern-day Israel. Israel wishes to exist as a sovereign state living in peace. Most Palestinians and other Arab nations, not all, but many of them, deny the right of Israel to exist.
Receive Israel at War by Skip Heitzig with your gift. Go to connectwithskip.com or call 1-800-922-1888.
All right, we'll be in Psalm 22 as we get started with today's lesson from Skip.
I did a little research on this interesting little worm, this crimson crocus, this tola. Let me tell you about its life cycle. When the mother is ready to give birth to its young, it implants itself on a tree or a piece of wood. When it gives birth, it actually dies in giving birth. It gives birth, it brings forth life, but the only way for it to give life is by dying. And so this mother worm dies, and her death, it's almost an explosion of that little carcass. And when she dies and the young are given life, that crimson stain is all over that tree, all over that wood. It's like a smattering of crimson on the tree, staining it red. What's even more strange is that little stain of crimson on the wood remains on the wood until it is bleached by the sun. And guess how many days it takes to bleach the red to white? 3 days. In 3 days, if you were to walk by again, you would see that one little crimson speck now turned bleach white. Go down to verse 14. It describes pain and suffering excruciatingly. I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. When did that happen to David? My heart is like wax. It is melted within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, a dried, broken piece of pottery. And my tongue clings to my jaws. You have brought me to the dust of death. For dogs have surrounded me. The congregation of the wicked has enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They look and stare at me. They divide my garments among them, and for my clothing, they cast lots. How could David have known 1,000 years before what exactly would take place outside of Jerusalem when it did? Look at some of the details. We'll just notice a few. Verse 14, I am poured out like water. Those who study crucifixion say that a victim of such a horrible death sweats profusely. There's a profuse perspiration. And we know that this started not only for Jesus on the cross, but way before when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane. Do you remember what the Bible says? He sweat great drops of what?
Blood.
You go, blood. How do you sweat blood? Well, those who know the medical field say that you have little blood vessels, capillaries around the sweat glands. And in an extreme case of anguished emotion, it is possible for those blood vessels to constrict and then expand to the point of rupture. And thus the capillaries release blood, effuse blood into the sweat glands so that the victim sweats great drops of blood. Sometimes soldiers before a battle have been known to have this condition. So I am poured out like water. It says, all my bones are out of joint. Anybody who has studied crucifixion knows this effect. The body is suspended by four wounds, two in the hands, two in the feet, and the body slumps itself out of joint. A victim of crucifixion uses his muscles as long as he can to kind of hold himself up on those spikes until finally the muscles just completely give way and the body goes out of joint. When it does, it causes suffocation of the internal organs, and that's how death comes. The psalm also says, my heart is like wax. It has melted within me. What language? I'm poured out like water. My heart is like wax. It's melted within me. And he also says, I can count all my bones. One of the factors of crucifixion by the Romans at the time of Jesus is crucifixion would last for days. A victim would stay alive for two, sometimes 3 days. Very slow method of execution. But because it was Passover, the soldiers decided, let's break the bones of the victim so they can die quick and get it over with. When they came to Jesus, they noticed something. He was already dead. So one of the soldiers took a spear and lanced his side, and out came blood and water. Blood and water, doctors tell us, indicates that the pericardium, that sac that holds the heart, was so filled with effused serum, so packed full of water, for lack of a better term, that the heart was crushed by that amount of fluid. And that's why some have said what really killed Jesus was a crushed or broken heart. And it was proven by the lance going in, and out came blood and water. Verse 15, my strength is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue clings to my jaws. You have brought me to the dust of death. What was the fifth statement Jesus made on the cross? Two little words, I thirst. Intense dehydration, loss of fluid in the body tissues. Down to verse 16, they pierced my hands and my feet. Impressive number of details given in Psalm 22. Down to verse 18, they divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Now, typically in a Roman crucifixion, the soldiers had enough compassion, normally, to give the victim's clothing, and especially the outer cloak, to the family. The mother especially. Jesus' mother was right there. They didn't do that. They were so hard-hearted, the soldiers, the four soldiers who crucified Jesus, that they decided to keep his clothing and cast lots, gamble for who would get the cloak. Now, why would they do that? Because it was predicted they would do that. They're following the script, and they don't even know it. Ralph Muncaster, who is an atheist, a former atheist, points out 23 prophetic details in Psalm 22 that correspond as being fulfilled in the New Testament. Amazing detail. So that's the abandonment at the cross and the anguish on the cross. The best part is the last part. And that is the accomplishment of the cross. Now there's a change. I didn't tell you this, but there's a change from verse 22 onward. Psalm 22 can be easily divided into two separate obvious sections. The first section is all about suffering. The second section is all about praise. The first one is a prayer given by one person. The second is salvation of many people. Very, very different tone in the wording. And so it would appear after verse 21 that there is a change that has happened, like the crucifixion is over. So look at verse 19. But you, O Lord, do not be far from me, O my strength, hasten to help me, deliver me from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog, save me from the lion's mouth and from the horns of the wild oxen. Now look at this last little sentence. You have answered me. Really? He answered him? How? Well, notice verse 22. I will declare your name to my brethren. Wait. How are you going to do that if you're dead? If you were just down, brought to the dust of death and they pierced your hands and your feet, how are you now declaring the name of God to your brethren? Well, let's go on. I will declare your name to my brethren. In the midst of the assembly, I will praise you. You who fear the Lord, praise him. All you descendants of Jacob, glorify him and fear him, all you offspring of Israel. For he has not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, nor has he hidden his face from him. But when he cried to him, he heard. There's an obvious change, right? Death is over. Weakness is gone. Suffering is past. Sorrow has vanished. Now there's life. Now there's strength. Now there's a declaration. Now there is praise going up. Something, it seems, happened between verse 21 and verse 22. Can you guess what that might be? How about a resurrection? It's not stated, but it is certainly implied by the abrupt change of language. The first part of the psalm is all about the suffering one. The second part of the psalm is all about the salvation of many. And the salvation of many is because of the suffering of one. So what does this all speak of? Well, it speaks of a few things. First of all, it speaks of resurrection, and it speaks of expansion. Let me explain. In Hebrews chapter 2, verse 12, the writer of Hebrews quotes Psalm 22, verse 22, and he says this, both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers, for he says, I will declare your name to my brethren in the midst of the assembly. I will sing praises to you. In that passage, the author calls Jesus the speaker, and his brethren are all those for whom Jesus died and rose again. This is what the cross accomplished, a family. Making a family. Now watch this. This is the most exciting. Watch how this family, this group expands. So verse 22, I will declare your name to my brethren. Verse 23, you who fear the Lord, praise him, all you descendants of Jacob. Who would that be? Israel, the nation of Israel. Glorify him and fear him, all you offspring of Israel. Verse 25, my praise shall be of you in the great assembly. Go down to verse 27. It's getting bigger. All the ends of the world, this family's growing, shall remember and turn to the Lord. All the families of the nation shall worship before you. For the kingdom is the Lord's, and he rules over the nations. Verse 30. A posterity shall serve him. It will be recounted of the Lord to the next generation. Verse 31, they will come and declare his righteousness to a people who will be born that he has done this. Did you know that you're in this psalm? You're part of that last little group, right? You weren't born when this psalm was written, neither was I. So it just kind of gets bigger and bigger. First of all, his brethren, he went to his own disciples, his own apostles, 11 of them. Judas had flaked out. He was out of the picture, so Jesus appeared in the upper room to his brethren, he called them. and then the Great Assembly, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I've always loved the story about the soldier in World War II. A group were fighting on the front lines. One of them was killed, sadly. Two of his buddies decided, we can't leave him here. We have to give him a decent burial. So they found a church that had a churchyard, a cemetery attached to the church. They went up to the clergyman and they said, can we bury our dead friend in your churchyard? The clergyman said, I'm very sorry. I wish you could, but because he's not of our denomination, we can't allow him to be buried here. He's not a member of this church. He's not part of our denomination. He can't be buried in one of our churchyards. Well, the clergyman, the vicar, could sense the disappointment in those two soldiers. So he said, tell you what, bury him just outside the fence. You know, it's close enough, but not inside, just outside. So they did. They dug a hole. They buried him. Got up the next morning. We're going to go back to the battle, but they said, let's pay our respects one last time. Visit the grave that we dug yesterday. And so they went to the grave, but they couldn't find it. It wasn't there. They searched around the perimeter, couldn't find it. It's like it vanished. So they went to the clergyman and said, look, we just want to visit our buddy's grave one last time, but we can't find it. Where we buried him, it's not there. And the clergyman said, well, you know, when I went to bed last night, I couldn't sleep very well. So I got up and I moved the fence to include the body of your friend within the cemetery. That is the heart of the gospel. Jesus has been moving the fence ever since that day. He said to his disciples, begin at Jerusalem with my brethren, the Jewish people. Then take it into Judea. Let's move the fence a little further. Then let's take it to Samaria. Let's move the fence a little further. Then take it to the ends of the earth, the uttermost parts of the earth. Let's make that fence honking big. So people yet born could be a part of this great gospel. What that should tell you is that it was God's plan to save you all along. He had you in mind when he writes about a people not yet born. The Bible calls that predestination. Have you ever read that verse in Hebrews? It's sort of an odd verse if you think about crucifixion. It says this, and you'll know it. Who, concerning Jesus, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame. Do you remember that verse? And have you ever looked at that and wondered, for the joy that was set before him? Who, getting crucified, has any joy? Jesus had a certain joy that made him able to endure that horrible, ignominious death. You know what that joy was? I'm looking at it. You're his joy. The joy that one day he would move the fence all the way to Albuquerque, New Mexico, and put you in, and you in, and you in. That's the joy that was set before him. It was his joy to move the fence and include you. Go down to the last verse. Let's close where it closes. Last verse, verse 31. They will come and declare his righteousness to a people who will be born. Look at the last phrase, that he has done this. See the word done? It's the word asa in Hebrew. A better translation, that he has finished this, completed this, ended the task, completed the task. It's done. What was the last thing Jesus uttered on the cross? It is finished. And then, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. It is finished. It's done. It's completed. I've done it. A finished task. One word in Greek, tetelestai. So the psalm begins with, my God, why have you forsaken me? And it ends with, it is finished. Done. There was a man who went to an evangelist and said, what must I do to be saved? And the evangelist, to his surprise, said, it's too late. The man was shocked. Go, too late? Certainly there's something I can do to be saved. Evangelist said, it's too late. It's already been done for you. You can't do anything. The watchword of the gospel is not do this, do that. It's done, finished, completed, over. You can't add to it. So quit trying to convince God that you're good enough to be saved. He knows you're not. Quit trying to add to what God did for you on the cross. Now, I know that I'm speaking to some who feel forsaken by God. If you've gone through some experience or set of those experiences, you feel like God has just sort of forgotten you. I just want you to know it's a theological impossibility for God to forsake you. Cannot happen. Cannot happen. You might be experiencing the silence of God. David did. Isaiah did. You may be experiencing the discipline of God. Every believer I've ever met does. You may even be experiencing the displeasure of God because of a particular sinful pattern in your life. But that's different from God forsaking you. The truth of this section shows us Jesus was forsaken so that you never have to be forsaken. Jesus experienced that darkness so that you could have light. Jesus experienced death, but in his death, like that crimson crocus, he gave life, gave birth, new life. There's a hymn I always love to quote this time of the year. It's called How Firm a Foundation. And one of the phrases says, the soul that on Jesus hath leaned for repose, I will not desert to his foes. That soul, though all hell should endeavor to shake, I'll never, no, never, no, never forsake. The reason we can sing that, if you do sing that hymn, and should, is because he was forsaken. A final little FYI, just got to throw this in, no extra charge. I got this from a listener to our radio program up in Washington State. I didn't know this till he sent this. It says, when a person dies, there's a medical condition called lividity. Lividity is the pooling of blood, or what appears to look like on the body, a bruising in the lowest part of the body at the time of death. So medical examiners can determine when a person died by the degree of lividity and how a person died by the position of where that lividity is. Now, what that means here is that when Jesus died on a cross, by reason of the position of his body, he would have displayed lividity in the lowest portion of his body, which would be his feet. So if you were there after the cross, after Jesus died, if you were to walk up to the cross, you would notice by looking at Jesus' heel that it appeared to be bruised. Now, tie that with the very first study we began Bloodline with, Genesis 3:15, when God said to Satan, in effect, there's somebody going to be born one day who is going to crush your head, and all you'll be able to pull off is you'll bruise his heel. So when you look at that bruised heel, you know there must be a crushed head around here somewhere.
Jesus endured the cross willingly for you. Isn't that amazing? That's Skip Heitzig with a message from his series, Bloodline, tracing God's rescue mission from Eden to eternity. Find the full message, as well as books, booklets, and full teaching series at connectwithskip.com.
We'd love to count you as a partner in sharing God's life-changing truth with more people around the world through Connect with Skip Heitzig. You can play a vital role in this life-changing work today with a generous gift to support this ministry and help expand its reach into more major U.S. cities. Visit connectwithskip.com/donate to give generously and share God's love with others. That's connectwithskip.com/donate or call 800-922-1888. 800-922-1888. Thank you for changing lives.
Come back tomorrow for Skip's message, The Lion in the Lamb. and discover how God restores you no matter how messed up you are.
That's what God does. God is into restoring human beings. You know, He could make perfect people and then populate heaven with perfect people, but He doesn't do that. He takes people who are dinged up, who've been beat up, bruised by time, damaged by sin, who have made wrong choices, who are weathered and scratched up, and He does a full resto job on them. Complete restoration.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on His wood. Make a connection.
Connect with Skip Heitzig is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.